And we're back with
Alan St. Pierre, the executive director at Normal, based in Washington, D.C. Alan, are you with us? Alan, you on there?
Hello, Alan.
Hope we do not have Alan. Alan, are you with us?
He was.
I think we lost Alan.
No, you got me.
Excellent. Alan, welcome to the show, Alan.
Hey, what's happening?
Alan St. Pierre from the Normal Foundation. He's the, I believe, the executive director. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Excellent. And he's going to be with us today to talk about some of the issues that are currently going on around the world. But first,
can you tell us about yourself?
Sure. I'm 37. I have been working at Normal for about 11 years. I graduated from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst with degrees in legal studies and wildlife biology. And I came to Normal via a law firm that was working on the then second longest legal case in the United States, Normal versus DEA, to reschedule marijuana from a Schedule 1 drug, which means it can never be used as a medicine, to at least a Schedule 2 drug, which could be used by prescription. And that is how I got turned on to Normal specifically in 1990.
Really big legislation.
It was a huge, huge case. Again, it was at the time the second longest lawsuit. It was 24 years to try to get the DEA to acknowledge that it misscheduled marijuana by placing it with heroin and LSD and not treating it like morphine, mepadrine, cocaine, and thousands of other compounds which have medical use and can be prescribed.
And today it still stands in the same classification, however.
That is correct. That it is still a Schedule 1 drug, and that is why one of the great legal and social battles of the last 7 to 8 years has been the medical marijuana issue, and that is why 9 of the 50 states have voted through public referendum to deviate from the federal policy, because the 1/5 of the U.S. voting population, which has gone into a voting booth and pulled a lever for reforming marijuana laws, they were not MDs, they were not PhDs. You do not need an advanced degree to figure out that marijuana is misplaced and misscheduled.
Mm-hmm. I will agree with you on that point. What is some of the most interesting things going on in your job nowadays?
Well, certainly it is watching the rest of the world put a squeeze play on the United States, and we are becoming an island unto ourselves when it comes to marijuana laws. In the years that I have been here, I have seen all of Western Europe either vote for or pass laws that move it closer to the Dutch model of marijuana. The only 4 countries that do not have what could be described as decriminalized laws are Finland, Sweden, France, and Greece. All of the rest of Europe has moved towards the Dutch model. And in the last year, it's been fascinating to watch our closest ally and neighbor, Canada, move in the direction of not only marijuana decriminalization, but as their Senate panel recommended 2 weeks ago, that the best way to control, socially, legally, morally control marijuana is to put it into a legal stream of commerce and end the 65-year prohibition of marijuana in the United States and Canada.
Well, I must say on a personal note, if Canada does legalize it, I will probably be applying for citizenship there.
I might be the first St. Pierre to go back to Canada in 100 years.
Reverse exodus.
Yeah, I think we're going to lose a lot of citizens in this country if that happens. But one of the things, speaking of the crunch on America on this particular topic, Harry J. Anslinger, the first commissioner of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, I believe it was him, otherwise... don't remember who preceded him, but basically
he's the first.
He convinced the United Nations to kind of start all this. Is that correct?
Indeed. Starting in 1932, Harry J. Anslinger, along with J. Edgar Hoover, these two men monopolized both crime and vice. Hoover held his job for 39 years.
Wow.
39 years he was the head of the FBI. Harry J. Anslinger headed up what was then called the BNDD, the Bureau of Narcotic and Dangerous Drugs. He headed that agency up from 1931 to 1962, so he had that for almost 30 years. In America, no man, no woman will ever hold a position of power like that more than 10 years. The FBI director can only serve 10 years. Point being here that these two men so manipulated and so controlled the debate and the argument around drugs that it gives us the absolutely twisted policy we all are burdened under today.
Most definitely. You have to think of how many people's mindset toward drugs and even drug culture was changed very greatly throughout that period when one person almost had like a monarchical control over what people would see about drugs.
Oh, indeed. And of course, for anybody who's not a student of history and they haven't seen things like Reefer Madness or read any number of books about that period of time, if I was to read the congressional testimony, the actual legal rationalizations put forward to make marijuana illegal, first there'd be a certain amount of laughter because it is so pathetically racist and absurd. But that laughter, as I found out today giving a lecture at the American University Law School, that laughter can quickly turn to tears because it is so pathetic. But we, 65 years later, I should note that October 3rd is the 65th anniversary of marijuana prohibition.
Wow.
Do you think current laws, speaking of racial biases, do you think current laws are particularly slanted against, say, African-American and Latino communities, particularly in New York City?
Oh, I do. In fact, that we can find the empirical and statistical proof, one of which is found right on the Normal webpage. We have a very detailed report, a county-by-county breakdown in the United States of marijuana arrests. And a year later, we put out another report that looked at the racial disparity. And I have to say that the area of the country, specifically the area of New York that you are occupying, or what is generally the upper New York's area, has the highest, with no peer, the highest ratio of blacks to being arrested to whites. In some areas, it's 8 or 9 to 1, meaning that for every white person arrested, 9 black people are arrested on marijuana charges. Now, when you figure in the use rates, according to the government, this is absurd. Whites and blacks use marijuana at just about the same rates. So how could we have such disparity? Well, without being overtly accusatory to a specific police chief or a specific police agency, it can be generally said that the crosshairs of the limited resources police have go on to minority communities more than affluent communities. That cannot be debated.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of chances do we have for realigning these policies?
Well, it really begins by individuals who want the laws to change asserting their opinion and their rights. And many people who want to see the laws change just complain. They complain in the dark and they never light a candle towards enlightenment. And so when people want to see the laws change, they must, absolutely must, part as difficult, as painful, as unsatisfactory as it often is, they have to participate in the political process. And by telling our elected officials that we do not want to see these laws play out the way that they do, if you don't want to see a 9-to-1 ratio of blacks being arrested, then bring it up with your representative, have subcommittee hearings, have the local university, such as your own, have the sociology department, the criminology department, look at what's going on and come up with some answers on how to do it better. But it all begins with people caring and doing something about it.
Certainly, and I don't think the prison systems could handle the influx of, you know, if the ratio actually did even out towards more.
I hope this doesn't sound too jaded, but if we were to have an inversion at all in the who gets arrested in this country, the laws would change very quickly. In fact, I would dare say that it was in the 1970s, late 60s and 70s, as the laws that were created essentially for blacks and Tex-Mex Americans were then being used on white middle class college students who were the first generation of Americans to really use marijuana as a recreant, that immediately when Tennessee, University of Tennessee students were getting 20 and 30 year sentences for getting caught with a few marijuana cigarettes, eventually proportionality kicked into play. The old mantra of, should the punishment fit the crime? And when that was the case, immediately society, white society, stepped forward and said, oh yeah, maybe we need to change the marijuana laws, which is what launched Normal in 1970 by representing John Sinclair and Lee Otis and other people who were receiving 10 and 20 year sentences for very small amounts of marijuana.
Well, you have to kind of stand back in awe at the entire class of criminals that was created with this kind of law. I mean, not only are you filling prisons, you're basically creating a need for new ones in that respect.
Oh, in fact, that is very true. And one of the most poignant parts of the lecture and debate I had today at American University Law School was the issue of private prisons. I mean, only in the drug war could we come up with private prisons. And if you take it from a purely capitalistic point of view, and I'm happy to say I'm a capitalist, that if you're going to go out there and raise money from a bunch of people, and then you're going to build a prison, and you need as the product in the prison a humanoid, that has committed a, quote, crime, unquote, and then the state is going to pay $30,000-$35,000 to the private entity to supposedly do a better job than the state already does. In New York, by the way, New York State is the biggest prisoner on earth. I mean, it makes more prisons and imprisons more people per capita than any place in the world, including China. So New York is already the prison capital of the world, but that not being enough, people come out with these great ideas of private prisons. And in essence, the police go out and recruit and find the clientele to put into the jails. And we, the taxpayers, pay for it all.
It is kind of a ridiculous runaround.
Well, it is, as a friend of mine who wrote what I think are some of the most terrific pieces ever on the issue of marijuana prohibition and what he then later called the drug war military industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as we were warned by General Eisenhower when he retired as president and as a general to watch out. Yes, we need to have a strong military, but watch out, because if it takes off, it takes off in its own life. It takes on its own life form, and arguably, as good as an idea, as laudable as it may have been years ago, or still today, that the government can stop people from engaging in the behavior of using marijuana, one can make a pretty strong argument we have gone way, way overboard, whether it's this, drug testing, racial profiling, mandatory minimum sentencing, just the report that Normal put out 2 weeks ago, 87,000 students are now removed from the student loan program because if they get caught with one single marijuana cigarette and get a state conviction, they are out of the federal program.
What's going to happen to the workforce?
And, of course, how that affects the workforce and how people embedded themselves. I mean, people don't go to college. They don't spend $30,000, $40,000, $60,000, $100,000 for the college experience to come out. And they're going to make more money. They're going to earn more taxes for their local governments, for the state government, for the federal government. And if you bust that person and you take away their ability to get an education, well, in essence, it overall lowers the input or the back linkages for the econ majors on what builds a society and builds a healthy economy. And so the Greek word for this is iatrogenic, meaning that you don't want to have the cure for the patient worse than the underlying disease. And certainly, in many, many ways, if someone could make the argument, well, marijuana abuse, not use, marijuana abuse is bad, the mm-hmm. argument can be made stronger from Normal's point of view that prohibition is worse.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
I would, I think one of the worst misconceptions is that people seem to kind of think that, oh, there's this problem and the way to deal with it is to just get rid of the person, then we don't have to think about it anymore. But that's really just an ignorant point of view. We're speaking with Alan St. Pierre from the Normal Foundation. He's the executive director. And we want to thank him for being with us today. We are almost out of time here today.
We would like to talk to him again in the future at some point.
Very much so. This has
been
fabulous.
It would be a great pleasure, and I appreciate the show, the nature of the show, and appreciate the support in calling it Friends of Normal.
Absolutely. So we are indeed the Normal Friends. And We will be supporting this issue all semester long, and hopefully this show will continue past our being here as well until it no longer needs to continue anymore. I hope to be able to grab a couple call-ins right now. I do want to thank Alan again for being here with us today. Alan, thank you very much.
Great pleasure. Hope to talk to you guys soon.
Okay, take care.
Thank you. If you have a question or comment, quickly, we have a few minutes left before the end of the show. You can give us a call here at the station. The number is 518-276-6248, and we'd love to hear your thoughts on marijuana reform laws. I think we have a quick community calendar announcement from Joe. Joe, you want to share some information about this event?
Well, keep your eyes out around the RPI campus if possible. This Tuesday, we look to have some sort of get-together along the lines of showing some movies, get some information out, get some flyers going to some people interested. Like I said, look out for news about it, but this Tuesday,
a fabulous movie. I believe it's
Grass.
It's called Grass.
Kind of documents a history of the drug war on the part of the U.S.
And we have callers.
And we have some callers. So, let's go to the callers. Let's find out what the public has to say. Hello, you're on Friends of Normal.
Hello.
Hello. Let's try the next line. You're on Friends of Normal.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Are your guest still there?
No, he is off the line already, but did you have a question?
Yeah, I wanted to ask him about, I had a friend who got busted growing stuff on his own property and, doesn't intend.
Oh, my.
And
We're back.
A few technical difficulties. If that caller wants to give us a call back, we'd be more than happy to field that question.
A little miscommunication.
Yes, much apologies on that issue.
Sorry.
Let's go back to the phone lines and take a couple more callers before the show
WRPI,
wraps up.
WRPI, you're on the air.
Hello? Friends of Normal. Hello, Friends of Normal, you're on the air. You're listening to your radio. You got to listen to the phone over there, whoever's calling us. All right, let's go to the next caller.
Ding.
Yeah, not that person. Let's go to the next caller. Friends of Normal, you're on the air.
Hey, I'm a white middle-class user, and I've been busted a couple times for possession of marijuana. I've been listening to the program, and it's a great one. I think there's just not enough people who understand the benefits of smoking weed and using it for fuel and fiber. I'd like to hear more talk about it being used as an alternative energy source.
Oh, really?
There's a lot of stuff in the media these days about, you know, alternative fuel sources for cars, hydrogen cells, and electric cars and whatnot. But biomass, hemp is an amazing product, and I'd like to hear a little more about that and what you guys have to say.
That's an excellent point, actually. I believe it was not too long ago that hemp is now considered illegal by the FDA, actually. Hemp products were removed from all food items not too long ago. I believe there was a mini battle about it, but the pressure was mostly from people who sold the products, not from people who bought it. Unfortunately, the one thing that seems to be disappointing is that the community that does exist, although people would like you to believe it does not, there is a community that exists to support the entire marijuana trade, and they're not a very vocal community in the political world. They find other ways to deal with
it. Fiber alone is phenomenal.
But
I mean, it's
absolutely
amazing that the petrochemical companies, when they came up with synthetic fibers, were involved in keeping hemp prohibited because they had just developed ways of harvesting the fiber from the hemp that would make it almost free as far as manpower.
It's a tactical threat to their bottom line.
Yeah, we couldn't have that, could we?
Well, this will certainly be covered on a future show.
Absolutely. So, thank you for that call. That's a great point. We really appreciate
it. I'm
going
to burn one. Thanks, guys.
Take it easy, man.
Bye. Take it easy.
Let's go to our next caller,
WRPI.
Friends of Normal.
Thank you.
Hello, Friends of Normal. You're on the air.
Thank you. I just wanted to say I'm calling from Lehigh University in Pennsylvania. I want to say that your show is really great.
Thank
you. You guys are doing a good job. Keep it up.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the support.
Excellent.
All right.
Take care.
We'll take one more caller today, and then we're going to have to move on to our next program on WRPI.
WRPI.
Hey, guys, in the first caller got cut off.
Oh, okay. Oh. Sorry about that.
Sorry about
that. Nothing personal.
No problem. Okay, here's the deal. My friend of mine got busted 9 pounds on his own property for his own personal use. I'm wondering about, I guess this would have been a question for your guest, but, you know, with the Rockefeller drug laws being what they are, is there not room for a judge to make a discretionary thing that he's not dealing, you know, is my friend going to go to jail for a long time?
That's a really good question.
It sure is. There is a lot of room, although that is considered quite the quantity these days.
We don't know where you're calling from, so we don't know what local laws will apply, or certainly state laws.
New York State.
Well, that's kind of one of the issues, actually, as well. There's different levels. There's levels where there's laws on the state level,
right,
and you may get past those and then be faced with federal charges as well, which are on the federal level.
Is that where the discretion kicks in, that they could not make it, as the expression goes, a federal offense out of it?
Well, there are minimums, and I don't have in front of me what the minimums are. They're actually,
right,
if you want to go to normal.org, they are listed there.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
But basically, if there's a minimum on the federal level and he's been charged with something federally,
right,
then that minimum would more than likely apply.
Right, next point real big. If we can't even get medical marijuana passed, right? I mean, that tells you the resistance. They don't want us getting high. They don't want people altering, you know, in other words, no bar fights ever happen when people got high. You know, let's talk about the cultural underpinnings, right? People get stoned. Of course, you got people, you know, bikers. I mean, there's some, you know, losers of the world who will do, you know, all kinds of drugs and marijuana and be you know, the Rastafarian concept. You know, we use this as a, you know, it's beyond getting high.
It's
sacrament. Almost like it's a spiritual quest, you know. Definitely. And those people, that spiritual quest is not, is I think, you know, like the Christian Coalition, just to pick a right-wing group, is against that 100%, and they'll be, you know, they own politicians.
Sure.
And they're not going to have that any group of people in America pursuing spirituality, like, behind marijuana.
Well, there certainly is a religious element that some people believe that exists in this entire thing. I don't know that we have the time or the means to discuss that at this point, but no, that definitely brings up an interesting point, which is that there are definitely other factors that some people are essentially, if you will, profiting off this.
Yes,
and that may be in the fact that they're able to keep a job, but that's a profit, and that's something that they're doing with an intent other than keeping the public safe and other than...
You mean the prison situation?
That would be a piece of it. Even
the
people who the
whole prison, of course, the whole prison industrial complex. That's, you know, they definitely rely on marijuana bus to keep that thing going, right?
Certainly. Well, thank you for calling.
Guys, later.
Take care.
Thank you very much. You've been listening to Friends of Normal on 91.5 FM WRPI Troy.
Thank you, callers.
Thank you very much. All the opinions you heard on today's program have absolutely nothing to do with anybody at RPI, the Rensselaer faculty. The
staff of Rensselaer.
The staff of the radio station, or anybody else but the three people in this room. So we do thank you for listening, and if you would like time to have a rebuttal on the show, you're welcome to call us and request that. Our number is 518-276-6248, or you can write to the station if you have information or other questions as well. Our address is 1 WRPI Plaza, Troy, New York, 12180. Thanks again for everything. We're glad that you joined us today, and again, thanks to Alan St. Pierre from Normal, who was with us today as our special guest. Please tune in again next week and every week. My name is Sam.
I'm Bud.
And I'm Joe.
And we are the Friends of Normal.
Those guys.
Protect our environment. This is our planet.